You've tuned to The Turley Frequency, starring your host, Kevin Turley, with guest stars Mike Romano and Reed Hodges, and special guest stars, the members of the FCC, whom we respect respectfully. Now, time to get tuned into The Frequency. Call the show at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. Or text us at 251-928-2111. And now we cross live to the Archangel Radio Studios in downtown Fairhope to at last feel the Turley Frequency.
Hello and welcome to Friday's edition of the Turley Frequency here on Archangel Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Turley, and for the next 2 hours, we hope to entertain and edify in equal measure. Today on the show, we meet our good friend, our very own Hollywood reporter, Mr. Robert Brennan, who'll be telling us all about what is happening in Tinseltown and will be giving his verdict on the new Jim Caviezel movie, Sound of Freedom. We catch up with Robert in the next segment. Top of the hour, we pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and you are invited to join us. Feel free to text us your prayer requests on 251-928-2111. The lines are open for you right now. In the final segment today, we continue our search for good summer reading, and this time we are talking to writer and educator Elizabeth Anderson, and she will be recommending books about nuns. Yes, I know. Stick around till the last segment to find out more. Okay, with all this good stuff, let's get this show on the road. Welcome, welcome, welcome. You are so welcome to Friday's edition of the Turley Frequency. It's not real. The welcome's real, but it's just unreal how real it is. Today we are celebrating pride. Pride in one's country, pride in one's origins. That is because this is the last show before the July 4th holidays. Yes, before America goes crazy in celebration of your Declaration of Independence from dear old Blighty, this side of the Atlantic, back in the 1700s. Somebody was asking me, an American was asking, if there's much sort of comment made this side of the Atlantic about July 4th. And I'm afraid to disappoint you all, virtually none. People know July 4th is a big American celebration, but you know what? People's sense of history is so limited these days. I'm not even sure they are aware that there was such a place as British America at one point. I know. It's amazing, isn't it? So America the brave, America the beautiful, from shining coast to shining sea on the other side of the Atlantic or the Pacific, whichever way you're going. It's a wonderful country. I've been there many times. I've loved it. I love the American people. I think they're so positive. Even in the midst of all the problems that you're facing, you're still a pretty positive people, unlike some of us in old Europe, where it's always misery. And people are always harking back to the past, a golden past. Whereas with the Americans, I tend to think you're always looking forward to the future, to the new frontier, to the next frontier, to whatever it is that you're going to do next. Even in the midst of all the troubles that beset the United States, there's still a feeling of resilience, a feeling that we can get through it and move to an even better America. Now, one of the things when thinking around this holiday, it suddenly dawned on me is that a lot of Europeans, I'm sure Americans don't, but a lot of Europeans don't understand what America is. Let me explain that. We've got all sorts of notions of America from film and television, music and all the rest. We kind of know Americana, right? We know the different bits and pieces that sort of the fabric that makes up American society and American culture to some extent, as much as anybody looking in can. But often people refer to America as a country. Now, it is a country in a colloquial sense, but of course it's not. It's a federal republic, right? It's a constitutional republic. It has all sorts of states which have their own laws and have their own, you know, it's different to the UK, which until recently was a very centralized country where we had one government, one prime minister for a unified UK state, and that was it. Only very recently have we had devolved government in Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. That's a relatively recent turnaround. And even the powers that each of those constituent bits have are different and in no way comparison to the kind of states that you have in the United States with their own identities, et cetera, et cetera. So we tend to forget that. Now, during the week, you may remember we had on retired Lieutenant General Thomas Spohr from the Heritage Foundation. You can go back and check it on our website if you want to listen to it again. He was a great man, speaking about America, speaking about America's fight for freedom, which continues today with him and the Heritage Foundation and many others across the United States, fighting for Americans to be free, to live free. Now, on the Heritage Foundation website, there's a very interesting little blurb when you put in the word republic, because it says America is a republic and not a pure democracy. Now, it goes on to make some, I would say, political points, the contemporary efforts to weaken our republican customs and institutions in the name of greater equality run counter to America's founders, etc., etc. But it makes the very important point that American republicanism and the ordered liberty are grounded in the Federalist recognition that non-majoritarian parts of the community, that means the minorities that exist within any nation, make legitimate contributions to the community's welfare, and that preserving these contributions is the hallmark of political justice. So it's very important to remember what a republic is and what it's not. And I'm sitting in a country talking to you this morning, which is most definitely not a republic for a very simple reason. I went up and looked at the dictionary definition of a republic. And obviously, republic comes from Latin, comes from res publica. The original Romans were very republican before the Caesars came along. And res publica means public affair. I.e., it's the affairs of the public. It's the right of the public, but it's also the duty of the public. So a republic is a state in which the political power rests with the public and their representatives, in contrast with a monarchy. And that's precisely what we have here. We have a king. We have a king in this country and a royal family. And if you, my friend, were to meet the king tomorrow, you'd have to bow in front of him. And if you were a woman, you'd have to curtsy. I know. Never forget, on your passports, it says American citizens. You're citizens of a republic. I'm afraid in the UK, we are subjects of the king. Subjects of the crown, to be precise, because it could be a king or a queen. We are subjects of the crown. It's a very different mentality, right? When you're a citizen of a republic, you take your place amongst your fellows. Your say is equal to everybody. What you want to contribute is of equal value as the next guy or the next girl. It doesn't matter. In a monarchy, it's not quite like that. Your contributions are welcomed, but you're not royal. Now, I don't want to over-exaggerate it because Britain is a democracy and the king is a constitutional monarch, so he doesn't go around laying down the law. But in very subtle ways, it creates a different dynamic within a country. Can you see that? We are not all equal in this country. That's stating a fact. I'm not making any political points. There is a king. There is a royal family. There is a line of succession. They are in charge, ultimately. Now, all of this may be as dry as dust, and this is Friday. On Friday, we change the gears a little bit here on the show. So I don't want to get into sort of political science here on a Friday on the Turley Frequency, because that's not what you're going to be celebrating this Tuesday, right? That's not what you're going to be celebrating this Tuesday. You're celebrating something else. And it intrigues me what it is that you are celebrating. Now, when it comes to republic, rather than the dictionary definition, I prefer what this gentleman had to say. Let's have a listen.
Republic. I like the sound of the word. It means people can live free, talk free, go or come, buy or sell, be drunk or sober, however they choose. Some words give you a feeling. Republic is one of those words that makes me tighten the throat. Same tightness a man gets when his baby takes his first step or his first baby shaves and makes his first sound like a man. Some words can give you a feeling that make your heart warm. Republic is one of those words.
That's right, John. That's John Wayne from the Alamo, that wonderful little speech. It's not even 2 minutes long. And yet I think there's more in that than many a political science textbook. Now, we'll speak more about John Wayne at another time and his wonderful story. But for many of us Europeans, and certainly when I was growing up, you know, John Wayne was, for me, America. The first film that really impacted on me, and this is going to sound crazy, right? I must have been about 6, 7. I went and checked it out, actually, when it was shown on the BBC. They showed The Alamo one Christmas on the BBC, and it left. I was traumatized by it in the nicest possible way. I was already a John Wayne fan, even at that age. But after that film, I mean, that was it. And it's still probably, if not my favorite, certainly one of my favorite films of all time, The Alamo. And you can't get more American than The Alamo as a film. I'm not going to go into the whole thing about the Republic of Texas and all the rest. We'll do that another day. But John Wayne is, for me, or was for me, very much a symbol of America. And what he said there is really a sense of what you're celebrating next week. You're not celebrating a constitution that's written down, in a sense. You're not even celebrating the sort of boundaries by which you are created as a nation. You're not really celebrating that. You're celebrating something which is intangible, something which you kind of sense when you go down your main street, wherever that happens to be. When you look back at old photographs of your family and your parents and where they came from, the struggles they had to make in years gone past. It's when you think of the people that you went to school with, the people that you've worked with, the kind of sense of a nation, of who you are, what makes a community. And it can be all different things. I know the United States is this famous melting pot of different nationalities, and that happens in every country over centuries. It's happened in this country. Try to find a real English person around here, you'd be struggling. There's no such thing as a real American in that sense. The real Americans, if you went back far enough, well, you know, we're talking the native tribes, and even they came from somewhere. So it's something else. It's something about celebrating that sense of community, and that's a good sense. Nationalism is never a good idea, right? Nationalism causes wars, but patriotism is a different kettle of fish. It's a different stripe. Patriotism is when you love something. Nationalism tends to be when you hate something. And we Christians, we love things. G.K. Chesterton said it when he said that the true patriot, when he's fighting a war, he fights for love of what's behind him, not hatred of what's in front of him. Now, I'm going to play you another little clip from John Wayne. I'm just going to set the context. This came about at the late 60s. I think it was either 69 or 68. I can't definitely define it, but he was a guest on the Dean Martin Show. Now, the Dean Martin Show was extremely popular in the 1960s. In fact, Dean Martin was the highest paid entertainer on US television in the 1960s. And I'm not surprised. We sometimes overlook Dean Martin. He was an amazing singer. He was a brilliant actor. And he was also a top-rated television show host, to say nothing of a great raconteur and a performer on stage. I mean, the man had talent coming out of everywhere. But so did John Wayne. Now, he and Wayne were good friends, off-screen and on-screen, and they appeared in a number of wonderful movies together, and they played off each other wonderfully well. And John Wayne came on the Dean Martin Show at least a few times. I've seen clips of at least two or three appearances. But this segment was a bit strange. And I think the segment went in a direction that the producers at the time probably didn't realize that it would. Because in this segment, we got something of the man, Marion Morrison, that's the actor's real name, rather than the scripted John Wayne. Take a listen to this.
Oh, here you are, one of the biggest stars in the whole world, been making pictures for 37 years, got a spanking new daughter. Now, what do you want for her, Duke?
Well, same as any parent wants, I guess. I'd just like to stick around long enough to see she gets started, right? I'd like her to know some of the values that we knew as kids. Some of those values that too many people these days are thinking are old-fashioned. Most all, I want her to be grateful as I am every day of my life to live in these United States. I know it may sound a little corny, but the first thing my daughter's learning from me is the Lord's Prayer and some of the Psalms. And I really don't care if she ever memorizes the Gettysburg Address, just so long as she understands it. And since little girls are seldom called upon to defend their country, she may never have to raise her hand for that oath. But I certainly want her to respect all those who do. I guess that's about what I want for my daughter, Dean.
I'm proud to know you, Duke.
So, I don't know about you, but that sort of honesty, that sort of truth, that sort of patriotism, that never goes out of fashion, right? What I liked most about John Wayne as an adult, as I read about him, was the fact that John Wayne espoused those views which you've heard there on air, even in the teeth of when the Hollywood executives were trying to blacklist him at the start of the 1950s because of his political beliefs. He was a man of courage. He believed in something. And you know, when you believe in something, you have enemies. You stood up for something, somebody else will stand up against you. That's the way of the world. But, and here's the thing. John Wayne was talking in the 1960s when America was riven with division of all sorts. The streets were aflame with racial division and political division. There was Vietnam, there was assassinations, all the rest of it. But he was still going to teach his daughter the Lord's Prayer and the Psalms. And you know what? Things got better for America. So let's be a good cheer this year. You know, things are not so good at the moment in all sorts of ways. But they've been worse. And you know what? They're going to get better. There's something afoot in the United States, something profoundly Catholic, something profoundly good. Perhaps it takes an outsider like me sometimes to notice these things, but I am convinced that good things are ahead for the United States. Why? Let me give you a few things to chew on over the next few days. Last year's Supreme Court ruling in the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization case. Yes, that case, the case that ended Roe versus Wade. The National Eucharistic Revival that's underway and coming to a crescendo next year in Indiana. That's a good thing. But you know what fills me most with hope about the United States? Not just its people and its resilience and its ability to create new things. But because, like the John Wayne's daughter, they'll know right from wrong. And they'll know what to choose ultimately. But there's another strange thing which I've discovered about the United States. And again, this is something which I've only recently learned. And that is that the United States is consecrated to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Never knew that. Now, I've talked in this show before about one of your founding fathers, Benjamin Franklin, and how he came to London in 1724. And worked in a printer's shop here in London. And that shop just happened to be the Marian Chapel, the Lady Chapel at St. Bartholomew's Church in Smithfield. where, allegedly in the 12th century, Our Lady appeared to a friar, to one of the priests that lived there. There's something, and then he went back and he founded the United States, or was one of them. But you know who the true founders of the United States are? People like Elizabeth Ann Seton, who we talked about during the week, or Francis Xavier Cabrini, or Juniper Serra, Father Michael McGivney, Father Augustine Tolton. These are the real founding fathers and mothers of the United States, and that gives me hope. So listen, when you're celebrating the 4th of July next year, or next week, remember, America does have a unique identity, but it is linked to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Okay, when we come back, we're crossing to California to speak to our good friend Robert Brennan. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Welcome to this Friday morning here, live, well, sort of live, as good as we can do. Now, it's my pleasure to welcome back to the show our very own Hollywood reporter, Mr. Robert Brennan. Robert writes from Los Angeles. I know, somebody has to. For it is there that he has worked in the entertainment industry, in Catholic journalism, and the non-profit sector for more years than he cares to admit. He is our man, reporting from Inside Hollywood. And it is a great pleasure to have him back on the show. Robert, welcome back to the Turley Frequency.
Thank you, Kevin.
What is it like at the moment in Los Angeles? Are you covered in fog, smog, fires? What's happening out there?
Well, it's, we call it June gloom. We had May gray before, and now it's June gloom. So we have a contest to see how long we can go before we have to turn our air conditioner on. So far, I'm holding out.
You know, I can definitely say that you are not sponsored by the Californian Tourist Board. That we are sure of, Robert. You're not selling
it to me. It's a lovely place to visit.
It's a lovely place to visit and to get out of as soon as possible. What's the freeway heading towards Mobile from Los Angeles? Which one would you take, Route 66?
No, I think you would take the 10. That's the 10. More southerly east-west road, interstate highway.
That's a good number.
That'll get you to Mobile.
Now, I want to pick your brains.
Take you to Chicago.
Absolutely. Now, Robert, I want to pick your brains because Jim Caviezel has a new movie out, Sound of Freedom, and I believe you have seen it.
Yes, I have. I was fortunate enough to be offered a screener for it to write a review by the production company. And it was an amazing film. The subject matter was overwhelming. It was like, I equate it to like watching Schindler's List. You know, I love that I had watched Schindler's List and it was a powerful film, but it was not an easy film to watch. And this has that same kind of a feel because of the subject matter, which is the trafficking of children. It's basically sexual slavery. It's just shocking.
Well, just before you say anything more, we're going to set the scene a little bit now, Robert. We're just going to play the trailer. I know it's radio and it's a trailer which is partly visual, but you'll get a sense of this. And you're right, it is very adult material. The trailer's okay to listen to if you've got young kids. There's nothing in it. But it's a serious subject. So maybe we'll just set the scene a little bit by having a little play. This is Sound of Freedom, which has just been released in the United States. And it stars Jim Caviezel, who many of you will remember from The Passion of the Christ. He was our Lord playing in that Mel Gibson movie. And it's also produced by Edward Varastegui, who I know personally and had some dealings with in the past. And we'll get into that in a minute. So let's take a listen to the trailer for Sound of Freedom.
Mm-hmm. don't think I can do this job, Tim. As soon as I lay down, all you see are those kids' faces. How long you been doing this?
12 years.
How do you do it?
It is the fastest growing international crime network that the world has ever seen. It has already passed the illegal arms trade, and soon it's gonna pass the drug trade.
Señor Timoteo, tú rescatas niños, ¿verdad? Quizá puedas ayudarme a encontrar a mi hermana.
Imagine walking into a room right now, seeing an empty bed. What would we do?
Shivering stars drift around in the sky.
We're Homeland Security. You know we can't go off rescuing kids in Colombia.
This job tears you to pieces. This is my one chance to put those pieces back together.
We're talking about extracting an 11-year-old girl from an army of rebels.
Not just her. Talking about rescuing hundreds of kids.
She could be a block down the road, or she could be in Moscow, Bangkok, LA.
Over 2 million children a year are being sucked into the deepest recesses of hell. If we do nothing, someday it's gonna reach the likes of you.
So that'll give you some idea of the sound of freedom, the kind of film it is. It's a very serious film about sex trafficking from Colombia to the United States and other countries. Now, Robert, I'm glad you said what you said, because I have a screener also sitting on my computer and I haven't yet watched it because, like you, you know, I'm not sure I'm ready for it. Now, am I being a little bit squeamish in that? Is it an ultimately an uplifting film without giving any of the plot away?
It is, and you know, it can be viewed as you can watch it almost as an action film. You know, Caviezel is great. He's a commanding presence, and he can carry a film. Obviously, we know that. And it works on that level too, as sort of a sojourn or a quest kind of a thing. And the performances by the children are also, you know, very, very powerful. But be forewarned. I mean, this is it's hard to put into words. In fact, you know, the capacity for human evil, we think we've seen it all. And then we hear about, you know, this is something that needs to be seen. It's something that people need to know about. And the fact that it's right now a $150 billion industry, sort of speak, and that slavery is more prevalent now than it's ever been in the history of the world. And the fact that a lot of the slaves are children, it's just, It is hard to watch, but it's important to watch. And on just a cinematic level, it's well crafted. It doesn't look like it was shot on a small budget, but I know it was. And that's also a testament to the filmmakers. And it keeps you on the edge of your seat.
Yeah, I mean, it's a subject which definitely needs films. And I know the film has been quite controversial, though, in other aspects, because the whole business of sex trafficking of children is also allied to or parallel with the whole pornography industry, which is also $1 billion worth of industry happening, not just in the United States, but across the world. And the exploitation of children is part of that. And I believe that the film has caused some controversy. Or am I right in what sort of Mel Gibson was suggesting? Do you know anything about this, Robert?
Well, I have heard that Mel Gibson may be coming out with his own documentary about the sexual trafficking of children, and how, you know, the other thing, which they touch on it in this film, but obviously the news tells us other things as well, that we're not talking about your typical, what you would think of someone who would abuse a child. We're talking about some of the most powerful people on the planet who are maybe engaged in this. You know, as I saw Jim Caviezel being interviewed, and he was mentioning, you know, the Epstein Island, and he said there are other islands. And yeah. actually, there's an island in this film that plays a part, a critical part in the plot. So that's a sickening thought that it isn't just like these, what we would think of very low life kind of people. There are people, it's infiltrating throughout all the strata of society, of our culture, especially in America and even in the upper strata.
Now, what really surprised me about this movie, because I'm talking about, it's released, I believe, in the United States on July 4th. But, you know, it's this idea of a new film. It must have been made in the last couple of years, but not at all. This film has been sitting around for a number of years. I'm sure you know the bit of the background to this.
Yes. And, you know, I, in my own small way, I know exactly what they've gone through because I was involved in production companies that we were trying to put stuff together and you would have funding and then you would lose the funding or
right.
you would, you know, I actually had a, not to make this about myself, but I had a thing with Disney years and years ago, a spec script of mine, the guy read it, he loved it. And we were starting, you know, having meetings and the whole bit. 1 week later, he was gone and my project was dead. So I know how hard it is to get something made. And, yeah, it's the making of the film is sort of a quest, and it really speaks to the commitment of the director and the producer
Absolutely.
And Jim Caviezel of staying
so,
with it.
So my understanding, Robert, is that the film was the photography, the principal photography was completed around about 2018, so 5 years ago. And it had a deal with 20th Century Fox at that time, but that was acquired. The studio was acquired by Walt Disney Pictures,
yes.
And they took the movie and they basically shelved it.
Yep, they sure did. And then the producer had to go. What producers of independent films have to do? He had to go scrounge for some, you know, find the money that they would need to you know get it to its final stage. And Disney wanted nothing to do with this film.
You know, it really does make you wonder, doesn't it, Robert? You know, Disney, Walt Disney Pictures, the home of family entertainment.
Oh yeah.
And
well,
we've
well,
got a film here failed. About the sex trafficking of children, a very serious film, a very good film. And what's their reaction to it? They shelved
yeah.
it. They put it
and
in
it
a large
they
bunker,
were...
lock the key, and keep it away from the public.
And then it isn't that the Disney company is averse to making so-called message pictures. They make them all the time. So it makes one wonder what about this message they didn't like so much. But, and it's also the business part of it, too. When something is as major as a film company being bought out by another one, you know, new people come in, you know, that's someone else's project. And there's that level, too. But, I just can't help but think there were other motivations for why they just didn't want to pursue this.
It does make you wonder. It really does, especially the way Disney has gone in the last few years. But anyway, enough about Disney and the dismal corporation as they have become. Listen, I'm in conversation with Robert Brennan. He's our Hollywood reporter checking in with us from Hollywood this morning. If you have any questions for Robert, any questions about any films, Hollywood, you've got a script, you want to know what to do with it, Robert's your man. Call us on 888-928-0881 or text me. I'll ask your questions on 251-928-2111. I'll be back with Robert straight after these words and we'll continue our discussion about all things Hollywood and all things movies. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here on Archangel Radio. To the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. In conversation this morning with our good friend Robert Brennan, who is a writer, a journalist, a Hollywood insider, and he speaks to us from Los Angeles this morning. So that's Sound of Freedom, if anybody can wants to watch that. You haven't quite sold it to me yet, Robert. I'll still got the screener on my computer. I'm not sure I want to watch it this weekend. This weekend, of course, is the run-up to July 4th. Great celebration across the United States. Are there any particular movies that the Brennan family watch every 4th of July or any that you would recommend?
Well, I always have a soft spot for Yankee Doodle Dandy, you know, Jimmy Cagney.
Love it.
Great performance. You know, that was when growing up, they would always show it on, you know, TV when I was a kid. So kind of grew up as that was like part of, became part of the 4th of July for sure.
So just to let people know, that's Jimmy Cagney, right?
Jimmy Cagney, I believe it was 1945. It's a very stylized biographical film about George M. Cohan, who was a famous Broadway actor, composer, writer, did everything, dancer, did lots of musicals and famous songs of the era. And, Cagney's ability to, people think of him as just, a tough guy gangster, but he was quite a dancer and performer in on a theatrical stage. He was amazing to watch.
Absolutely. Still, for my money, underrated, Jimmy Cagney as an actor.
Well, I think a lot of those big stars were underrated. They're taken for granted that because they were so bigger than life and managed and constructed in a way that they didn't have the chops and they did. And there are some performances by Cagney that are just amazing to me.
I totally agree. The other thing is, I mean, you're reminding me, I mean, the Cagneys, the Edward G. Robinsons, the Humphrey Bogarts, just to name three of certainly that genre. We got to remember as well that these are men, and there were lots of women as well, but these were actors who had no precedent. You know, they hadn't grown up watching talkie movies as we all have, and we're understanding sort of movie acting, and they just went at it, gave it a go. Some of them weren't even actors. They just give it a go, and somehow, bam, magic.
Oh, yeah. And there's a funny line about there was a country club in Los Angeles that was restricted. They wouldn't allow Catholics, Jews, or actors. And Victor Mature wanted to join the club, and they wouldn't let him join because he was an actor. And his line was, "An actor? Haven't they seen my movies?"
I love it. Now, I've got a question for you, Robert, from our audience. They're asking, are there any summer blockbusters that are worth watching? Anything coming up? Anything from this century, I guess? So you and I can get lost in the early part of the 20th century. So let's bring it up to date. Anything that we should have on the horizon? Something that you think, yes, that's going to be a summer hit?
Well, it's not a traditional summer blockbuster, but it's coming out soon. It's the Christopher Nolan's movie on Oppenheimer, which it has like a grand scale. It's about the man who developed the atomic bomb out in New Mexico towards the end of World War II, and it's got a typical largeness that Christopher Nolan brings to his films, and I'm very much looking forward to that. But there's a little picture, if you could bear with me. I saw it the other day. It was out last year and got very little play, but
right.
It's called Living with Bill Nighy. I don't know if you, mm-hmm.
What's it about? Give us the basic plot.
It's about Bill Nighy is a British bureaucrat who works in this little office with a bunch of minions, and everything is just, his everyday life is meaningless. And then he gets the report from his doctor that he's got 6 months to live, and he's trying to find meaning in his life. And the way he finds it is as sweet and poignant, and it is just a lovely movie. It's like a soft breeze. It's just lovely. I really was glad that I stumbled upon it.
Okay. I mean, again, Robert, we've done Sex Trafficking. Now we've done Terminal Illnesses. I mean, any comedies out there?
Let's see. Let's see. Are there any good plane crash movies? And I'm really looking forward to the movie where the guys develop the atomic bomb. So
So we've got apocalypse, we've got sex trafficking, we've got terminal illness. Robert, it's been great.
I'm your man.
No, I'm only joking. No, come on, listen, there must be something out there, because the summertime is a time to sort of relax, vacation. At the moment, we've got a spot on the show looking at great books for the summer, that sort of thing. Things that are just a bit different. It doesn't have to be sort of a comedy, a lighthearted thing, but something which is going to make people come out of the cinema, punch the air and think, yes.
Well, I wish I could say that about the Indiana Jones movie that's coming out, but
yes,
from what I've read and seen, I'm not holding out too much hope.
Why did they do that, Robert? I mean, because Indiana Jones, we all watched 30 years ago. There was 1, 2, 3. They were wonderful. I mean, why don't they just leave it at that? You know, why didn't they just say, look, it was great. Harrison Ford was in his prime. It was great stuff. Why do we have to kind of have this constant franchising, this constant repackaging? I know it's about money, but surely somebody in Hollywood thinks it's not all about the money.
Well, or at least if they're going to keep it going, do it like with James Bond and get a new guy.
Yeah.
But this going back to the well every, 5 or 6 years. And, we don't want to see our stars as old men, I think the first Indiana Jones film is just about as perfect of an adventure movie you could ask for.
That's right.
And we still, we'll still put it on in the house sometimes. If it's one of those lazy evenings, we'll watch Raiders. You can watch it over and over. But, they've just ground it into the ground. And it's a shame. But they know, they do the math. The bean counters say, if we have Harrison Ford in it, we know that we're going to be able to put it in this many theaters. We know we're going to get the sales, when we stream it and all of that stuff. So it's just a business decision.
What do you make of the recent Pixar release was it Elemental, which really didn't do very well at the box office? What do you put that down to?
Well, I think, along with a lot of other things, people are finally voting with their feet and with their wallets. And, I've read the reviews of it and in the background and, the character, they had a non-binary something character in the cartoon. And, I think parents have, said, okay, enough is enough. And it shows you how ingrained that agenda is, because it is a business and they want to make money, but they're willing to risk money in order to serve an agenda, as opposed to, trying to make something they think their audience is going to want to watch.
But I mean, do you see any signs at the moment? We've got Sound of Freedom. Both of us have watched Nefarious and enjoyed it very, very much. I know these are independent movies, but Hollywood executives, whatever we might think of them, they're not stupid people. They're not daft. They know what this is about, and it is about making money. It's about box office. So surely they're starting to read the room sometime and thinking, actually, we might have got our American movie-going public all wrong.
I think it's a fine line that they straddle, because at the certain levels of the business, at the highest levels, it's a club, and no one wants to be outside of the club, and so they have to have the same thoughts. And for an industry that talks about diversity, as long as everyone thinks the same, that's
right,
that's a no-go. You must all think the same way. But it boggles my mind that they're willing to go that far and not make enough money to keep their businesses going, because I'm sure that Pixar film was not cheap to make, and they spent a lot of money on promotion and advertising, and that's usually another at least third of a film
That's
budget
right.
is just that.
Some of the figures I heard bandied around, Robert, and in the movie industry, these you have to take them with a large pinch of salt, but it was something like nearly $200 million when you factor in production costs, marketing costs, and to date they haven't got back even $30 million. So it's a huge write-off, and you can only do that once or twice. before people start to say what's going on here, because no industry mm-hmm. is that solvent, even Hollywood, even Disney, even Pixar. So that's probably that on that score.
Well, Disney has gotten, I'm sorry, go ahead, Kim.
No, please go.
Well, Disney has certainly felt that pinch with on their online service, the Disney Plus, because
that's right.
What they've done with their Star Wars franchise, as far as, to put it one way, updating it and making it more woke and all of those things, and it's not resonating, and they've lost billions, over $1 billion on doing it that way. So, they brought Iger back in, and they're slashing budgets, they're slashing payroll, they're doing everything. So they are suffering, that's for sure.
That's interesting, and hopefully that's good. What about our friends who made Nefarious? I know Kerry Solomon. We've had him on the show. I've interviewed him for the press as well. I think he's what they have done with Nefarious is so countercultural. But I tell you what, and you will know more about this, Robert. I really respect him and his co-pilot Chuck, because if you look at even the list of names of films that they've produced in the last 5 years, they are so putting it to Hollywood. This is true countercultural filmmaking. What do you make of Kerry and the team? I mean, do you think this is something which is here to stay?
Well, I think those guys are crazy, and I wish I was half as crazy as they were. They are absolutely fearless.
Yes.
And that's the kind of fearlessness you need. If you looked at their career, you'd say, no, that's not going to happen. They're not going to get these movies made, and they get them made, and they do them on a level that, actually do cross over. It isn't like Nefarious is a good movie. It doesn't matter where you're coming from any particular point of view. I mean, it's riveting, two character study in, some deep stuff. So, I think as with all trailblazers and pioneers, they may be paving, a road. They may be, I think there will be. There'll be people behind them, and because of the stuff that they've accomplished and the fact that they just don't compromise what they want to do. And, they don't make the pictures because they think, okay, this is what the general public or everything is going to love, even though there's those elements. They are, absolutely convinced that they are meant to do this and to incorporate their Catholic faith into entertainment. And they find that balance, and it's amazing.
I mean, sometimes we're guilty, I'm guilty, of looking at the glass half empty. Because when we've got films like Sound of Freedom and Nefarious coming out very quickly, and we've got filmmakers like Kerry Solomon, and also people like Eduardo Verástegui and others mm-hmm. who are, these are men who are in this not because they're called to be creatives in Hollywood, but they are 110% Catholic as well, and they totally get it. And with those type of people moving around alongside sometimes the Jim Caviezels and the Mel Gibsons, something in 20, 30, 40 years' time, there may be people writing about a sort of nascent Catholic renaissance that is about to take place in Hollywood, or am I being now far, far too optimistic?
Well, I think you're being a little too optimistic, but if you had told me that, 15 years ago when I met Kerry and Chuck, that they would be at this place, I would have said, no, that's not going to happen. And they are. So I'm optimistic. I'm thinking, what's next? What's coming next? And there is that core group now that is making films, getting them done. The fact that Sound of Freedom got made and is coming out. I think it's also interesting. It's coming out on the 4th of July, since it's about slavery. Let's do Independence Day. It's, I think maybe when we look back in 15, 20 years from now, I see that's where this all really started to take root.
It's time to dust down all your old scripts, Robert. There's obviously producers that need material.
I think that's a capital idea, Kevin.
I'll have to dust down some of my own. I have to say, Matt, I did meet Eduardo when he came to London once, because I was working with a film company at the time, and we decided that we were going to help release Bella. And
that's a lovely movie.
It's a beautiful movie, and it couldn't get love. Nobody wanted to touch it in London, so we shopped it around and got the most brutal atheistic film distributor. But we showed him the figures in the States, you know, and he said, "I'll take it." So he did, and he released it, to give him his credit. We got no money out of it. I think he earned quite a few quid, but anyway, a few dollars. But that's another story. But I'll never forget the reviews. Robert, I'll never forget the reviews. The type of reviews that Nefarious have got could almost be sort of carbon copies of what we got for Bella. There were people who were not reviewing the movie. They were reviewing their own conscience, or whatever it was they were reviewing was a million miles away from the story, the film, the acting, and all the rest of it. So nothing ever changes in a way. But even then, you know, it's worth a try. It got it out there. And you never know. You never know. Somebody might come across that movie and have their lives changed. In the same way, Sound of Freedom or Nefarious, who knows in the years ahead? Because the one thing we do know about movies, you and I in particular, is that they play forever, right?
Yep. They do now.
They do now. But yep. Even so, I mean, we've never had more access to some great movies. Now, we're just coming to the end of this, and I just want us to come together to recommend a film which can be easily had on YouTube. And I've got one in mind, and I know you like it, that I watched recently, and I thought it was a fantastic film. And it's called Suddenly. Do you want to tell the audience what it's about, Robert?
Oh, Suddenly. It's unnerving in its... in that it almost predicts something. It's Frank Sinatra and Sterling Hayden, and
yep.
Frank Sinatra is an assassin who is holding out in an apartment room overlooking a train station, waiting for a political figure to come in to assassinate. And it's a sort of a hostage situation and a very tense, well-made movie.
It is, and it's freely available on YouTube. So if you're stuck at home and you just want something to watch, Suddenly, it's about 90 minutes long. Robert, tell people where they can find out more about you and all your adventures in Hollywood.
They can find me on Angelus.com, Angelus News, where my columns appear every week. And they can write fan mail there for me.
Okay, that sounds like a deal. Robert, it's been great fun having you on the show. Come back soon. Talk to us all things Hollywood.
Will do, Kevin. Thank you.
And happy 4th of July. That's Robert Brennan from Hollywood. When we come back, we will be speaking to the Lord, because we'll be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio.